Welcome back to week 5 of Stat 209. We are now turning to PDF file, finish off our content for week 5. And the topic for that this section is interpreting association, spurious correlation, and Simpson's paradox. So some part of this is just a quick pass through deep review on correlations, but also just to make sure that some of these basic ideas haven't fallen through the cracks of your various course offerings. So a little bit is on Simpson's paradox, which you may or may not have seen much of, and back to the simple zero-order correlations and partial correlations that figure into spurious correlation, the basic ideas of confounding, etc., that usually start out these kinds of introductions. So lecture topics, we're going to do spurious correlation and then Simpson's paradox and a little bit of introductory on zero order correlations, because we have some examples. We have our Nobel Prize winner in chocolate example. We have foul mouths are more honest, which pleases me greatly. Size does matter, brain size and intelligence. Also good, and then we have spurious correlations and Simpson's paradox examples. And so just going through some of these as deep review or some enrichment. We have our implementations. There's a couple of packages that do Simpson's or spurious partial correlations. And we have some review questions. So that's page 1 of the PDF, 38 pages of Lect 5B. So let's get into it and try to finish up a little bit early today to give you some time back. Okay, from week 0, we had Stephen Stigler's nice overview paper, and we have used this in the measurement error and regression situation, showing you about salary bias. But just coming back to the beginning of this short note, and Stephen Stigler is a friend of this department. Correlation is not causation, of course, and can we deduce cause? And he gives us a couple of examples. The example of note is Carl Persson, so we've been doing this for 130 years or so. Brain sizes, and if you stratify on gender, the correlation between length and size that he's interested in goes away. So that's one of these spurious correlations where the finding changes if you stratify. You have a confounder gender. Chocolate Nobel Prize. This was a sarcasm from the New England Journal of Medicine. Good for them. And on PDF page 5 is my favorite scatter plot, of course. And we have a strong correlation, 0.8, even bigger if we take out Sweden, clearly hometown bias. And we can see at the country level, and we'll come to this next week with aggregation bias, that inflates typically individual level correlations. But we can see what do we make of chocolate consumption and Nobel Prize winners? Well, you could make a biological argument of the value of chocolate consumption, flavonoids. I eat chocolate at the gym when we used to be able to go to gyms. So that's our zero order correlation, causal, maybe. Then we have Jennifer Lawrence, Pride of Louisville, making a gesture, and correlation between honesty and foul-mouthedness, and social psychology and personality science thinks this is important. So various styles of cursing and whether that's correlated with honesty. And yes, it does have a full publication recently. Relationship between profanity and honesty. I believe in that. From Maastricht, Netherlands, and Hong Kong, and Graduate School of Business, Stanford, California. So it's a hometown paper, and if you look on PDF page 8, you can see honesty is highly correlated, or at least somewhat correlated. Social science 0.3 is a big correlation. Honesty is positively correlated with all profanity measures. And they even do some partial correlations, try controlling for age. Is age a confounder? It's interesting. Gender is separate by gender. And so they try various things with correlations that people do. So there's a correlation example, and here we have another one. And this is interesting, blonde. So it's a correlation between a dichotomous variable, blonde or not, and the outcome variable is earnings. So I have correlation between blonde or not and earnings, and that's a positive correlation. This is from observational data. In experimental data, we interpret those correlations. The correlation between being in treatment versus control and outcome, such as blood pressure or hormone level, whatever we're trying, we might have a treatment control protocol for. Is there an association between what group you're in and your outcome? That's treatment effect. Observational data, of course, that's tougher because there are confounders. Here we have from the Daily Mail, and we have one of our favorite Stanford dropouts, Reese Witherspoon. She's happy she got in the lecture. So girls with lighter locks bring home $1,000 a year more than brunettes or redheads. Super drug, right. So is that causal? Well, it's not an experiment. You could perform the experiment because whether it's natural blonde or dyed doesn't matter in this study. And so correlation is not causation. Slate had a nice little article I used to link to. One of the fun things about it, there's a picture of Carl Pearson. We haven't had that yet. We had Fisher, but there's Carl Pearson, PDF page 10. And then PDF page 11, one of the fun things, Google Scholar, when it first came out, you can see the graph of number of searches on correlation does not imply causation, correlation is not causation. By 1960, it took off. That is the number of sightings of that for books published after 1960. That became a big deal. And that's a quick thing on correlations, not causation. In Friedman's nice introductory chapter, we talked about Yule. And then the second example in Friedman's association causation paper was asbestos in the drinking water and cancer. And that's in the Bay Area. Milpitas is more at risk than Palo Alto, but investigators measured asbestos correlation concentration in the water for each tract, enormous variation. Higher concentrations are found in poorer tracts. You don't want asbestos in the water. And what they don't do, they try to do adjustments, but what they don't do, they find an association, but they don't have smoking rate. And that's certainly a serious confounder because that's correlated with SES also, more smoking in poorer neighborhoods. That's a nice little association study, whether or not you adjust out other confounders. PDF page 13, confounder associated, PDF page 14, with the putative cause and with its effect. Confounder may explain all part of the observed association. In epidemiology, unmeasured or poorly measured confounders are the rule rather than the exception. And that's a difficult thing. So zero order correlations, simple correlations are hard to interpret, but have some things. And then there's a great set of things. Now it's a book, Tyler Vigen deserves kudos. We have all sorts of spurious correlations. Well, these are zero correlations that you don't believe. And so PDF page 15, correlations, U.S. spending on science, space, and technology correlates with suicides by hanging, strangulation, and suffocation. Correlation 0.997, 998, right, over years. All right. So we have all of PDF page 16, per capita consumption of chicken, crude oil imports, page 17, et cetera, et cetera. Correlations come up. Arcades and computer science doctorates on PDF page 19. So there's fun things. Zero order correlations are not necessarily definitive, right? Causal interpretation for an observed association requires extra support. That's from Stat 141 textbook on PDF page 20. So we're just flipping through standard things. And the Tom Cruise, this was way back, Tom Cruise has one. Okay, a good spurious correlation example. ultrasound. Physicians use ultrasounds in fetus pregnant women. Ultrasounds first used, there were concerns that the procedure might be harmful. And early studies seem to bear that out. Babies exposed to ultrasound in the womb were lighter at birth than babies not exposed to ultrasound. Study was done, randomly chosen. So we had an association study, then we actually did a randomized controlled trial, and there was no effect. Reason why you got an association, ultrasound was being used mostly for women who were experienced problem pregnancies, which are going to lead to low birth rate. So there was, it was the confounder there. Complications of pregnancy were leading to low birth weight, not the use of ultrasound. So zero autocorrelations are different. X and Y depended on Z. Confounding, smoking, and birth rate. I skip over that. PDF page 22 from Winters and Samuels. And so we have third variable problems. PDF page 23 is the beginning of the Santana. Are zero order correlations spurious? And we might have a correlation between X1 and 3. It might be ultrasound and birth rate. And we have another variable X2, whether it's problem pregnancy. We want to do the partial correlation, which is an attempt to root out the spurious association. Are 1 and 3 correlated over and above X2? And there's an adjusted variables interpretation from last week when we went through that. That is the partial correlation of 1 X1 with X3, 2 partialed out. Sometimes they say held constant. I try to avoid that. Is the zero order correlation, that is a simple correlation between two adjusted variables, X1 with X2 reamed out of it, and X3 with X2 reamed out of it. And therefore, you can actually do a scatter plot corresponding to a partial correlation. And that works even for multiple partials, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And part correlations are just a variant of partial correlations. From stat 60, you know how to test the correlation is zero by t-statistic, get a confidence interval by Fisher z-transform or bootstrapping, or core.test, of course, in R. For partial correlation, you can just use the adjusted variables and adjust down 1 degree of freedom, which isn't going to make much difference. So here's a partial correlation, just to deep review it, and it's a correlation between adjusted variables. So you can construct a scatter plot and look at your partial correlation. That's useful to know on PDF page 23. PDF page 24 gives, Norma Radin had a nice example. Nurturance and achievements is achievement motivation, basically a mediating variable between nurturance in the home and achievement. I had these data way back, and so I did it. And there we have the partial correlation, and do it by adjusted variables. I did a little expository paper on that way back. Should have grabbed it, put it in here. The part or semi-partial just adjusts out one of the variables, and you can see that's related to the squared multiple correlation, if you like it. And those are bigger, but the partial correlation is the one people use to address confounders or spurious common causes. There is a package PPCore that does partial correlations, and I show you that in the review questions. It doesn't do much beyond what you know how to do, but it has it. So then PDF page 27 is the handout again. And I want to get us to Simpson's paradox, but I want to jump ahead, PDF page 28, just dichotomous outcomes, and I'll come back to 27. I just wanted to do this. So we may most often talk about measured outcomes, such as Y. In PDF page 28, the right-hand frame, we look at a t-test on group membership, where that's the dichotomous variable, and the outcome is correlation. Is outcome associated with group membership, and you could assess that by mean difference or a point by serial correlation, which is just a difference of the means, standardized difference of the means on Y given group membership. When you have a dichotomous outcome W, which might be a split on Y as I have it in blue, the group effects on dichotomous outcomes where we have treatment control, group membership measured by G, and then W, which is also 0, 1, high or low on outcome, or success, fail might be the outcome. You're in 2x2 table situations where the independence hypothesis is the same as the no group effect hypothesis, and you could old-fashioned is to do x chi-square deviation from independence with a phi coefficient would be the correlation, square root of chi-square over n. That's a product moment correlation between the dichotomous variables. Others measure of association or relative risk, or more modern, the odds ratio. And we can do inference for the odds ratio. But basically, the equivalence between what we do with a measured outcome, where we have point by zero correlation, here we have a phi coefficient, which is just a 0-1 Pearson correlation. And it's independent in a 2x2 table. So that's just good to review, because we most often think of outcomes as measured, and they aren't. But that gives it a... Then dichotomous data, spurious correlation, confounding. And the example for dichotomous outcomes that comes up most is Simpson's paradox. And that is... 2x2 tables where the conditional and the marginal table odds ratios flip, so based on a third variable. And so we might have a 2x2 table of x and y dichotomous variables, and it shows a positive association, but if we condition on a third variable z, we actually get a negative association within each level of z. That's Simpson's paradox. The conditional marginal table have different directions for the odds ratios. And we'll talk about the death penalty example in a moment. So Simpson's paradox is the last thing we want to do here. And that is the wiki page on PDF page 29 is an excellent source. Sometimes the wiki pages are quite good. And so Simpson's paradox, or Yule Simpson, because Yule is back there doing it. Parent paradox, successes of groups seem reversed when the groups are combined. That is, that'd be the marginal table. The conditional tables would be separate groups. We'll see that in the Berkeley admissions case. And so a couple, so caution against inference of causal relationships based on the association between two variables. Here, the two variables are both dichotomous. And so Simpson described it in 51 and Yule back in 1903. So we can give Simpson credit. You could have it for continuous data, but usual most. And so kidney stones is one of the classic examples. Berkeley's sex bias and admissions is another. And Agresti's death penalty. Those are the three we're going to look at quickly. And I think we'll get done a little bit early, give you some of the time back that I overran last week. I am keeping a time card of all the weeks, so I will make it work out. So the kidney stone treatment. PDF page 30 is the linked paper in British Medical Journal, and that confounding. Association between exposure and outcome is investigated, but exposure and outcome are strongly associated with a third variable. An extreme example of this is Simpson's paradox. The third factor reverses the effect first observed. Okay, and here's kidney stones, which I hope you have no real-life relevance to, either you or your family. They're nasty. Okay. And so there's two kinds of surgery. Open surgery, which had a success rate of 78%, where the new surgery, call it PN, had a success rate of 83%. So it looks like the new surgery is better. Looks like it's improved of use. However, the success rates look rather different when you condition on the kidney stone diameter. So ignoring kidney stone diameter, overall, the new surgery, PN, was better. If the stones are less than 2 centimeters, open surgery, the old-fashioned, was better. And for stones of greater than 2 centimeters, the open surgery was better. And so conditioning on the important third variable indicated that you should always do open surgery. And the imbalance here was caused by the fact that the diameter of the stones indicated which surgery you were going to get, but open was better in each case. So there was a selection, mainly by the doctor, probably not the patient, into type of surgery, and that was probably not a good idea, because even though overall the new surgery looks better, conditioning on the sizes of the stone for both small stones and large stones, the old-fashioned is better. Good for them. I hope we don't ever have to need any of that knowledge. That's Simpson's paradox. Gets taken up a lot, and even in Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, on PDF page 31, there's a little number of people giving talks on this. But 2x2 tables, such as kidney stone examples selected at random, probability is approximately 1 in 60 that Simpson's paradox will occur purely by chance. That is, there's no associations. You can still get it 1 out of 60 times. That's a hard probability calculation, but it's a fun one. So here's reference 13 is the one we're dealing with, but there's a lot. Here's a nice set of references on Simpson's paradox from the wiki page. Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy even has it, and so might as well give it props. Simpson's paradox: association between pair of variables can consistently be inverted in each subpopulation of population when the population is partitioned, i.e. if you stratify on a third variable, you can reverse the association, and it can be quite instruction. So the Berkeley admissions, which was a long legal challenge, Dave Friedman and others were involved, is the fact that it looked like if you just did men, women, yes, no, it looked like men were having a higher success rate of admittance. But if you stratify by departments, and admissions are done at the graduate level by department, so you should always do that, you can see there's really no gender bias. Males and females have the same rates, roughly, in each department. There was an imbalance created by the fact that females applied to certain large departments more than males, etc. But department by department, there doesn't seem to be much bias at all. Those proportions are pretty close. And the important thing is to stratify in department where admissions decisions are made. So that should have been the So looking overall, that is ignoring department, just looking overall, is kind of an uninformed way to look at it anyways. But lawyers did it for a long time. So there's the Simpson's paradox is reverses the idea. The most famous example, and it's taken up in Agresti's book, although one should be gentle about this. This is a charged topic, but it is a good lesson, and I think it's worth taking up, but I'll be careful in what I say. The death penalty, is there racial bias in looking at the death penalty? And this has been litigated many times. And so we have some data. I did this in Stat 141 for years. We have, if we look at white and black defendants and whether the death penalty was applied, and if you look at the prop table of that, it looks like whites get the death penalty more often than blacks, just slightly more. Therefore, there doesn't seem to be a pronounced racial bias. But if you condition on the race of the victim, that's the third variable, and look at the defendant by death penalty, yes, no, for separately for black victims and white victims, you get a very different conclusion. For each level of victim race, black defendant more likely to receive the death penalty. Reversal by conditioning, instance of Simpson's paradox. That is, the marginal table ignores the race of the victim. If you condition on that, you do see a disparity with black defendants more likely to get the death penalty. That's quite instructive. And there are reasons for that, but I'm not going to get too far into the subject lest I get too much. So here, PDF page 35, have it written up more nicely, just a PDF of the ASCII rather than the scanned handout if you want to take a look at that. And it's good to, of course, do the prop tables if you haven't done those, et cetera, and how to read in matrix a table and then do some useful things in it with it, getting the conditional probabilities and the marginal probabilities is just good basic R, so this is good background. And here's PDF page 36, just the treatment from Agresti's Log Linear Models, the classic books, and controlling for victims' race, percentage of yes, death penalty verdicts was higher for blacks and whites, direction association is the reverse of the marginal table. And so just putting in, if you haven't looked at Agresti's books, either the more technical or the simpler version of log linear models, you should. Those are standard for basic applied statistics. And then just for the person who wrote the Simpsons package, he also has a paper doing tennis examples and doing it with continuous variables. So I just wanted to note that, PDF page 37, 38. Don't think I'll go into that example there. I'll just call it Simpson's Paradox. It's a good thing to know about. And I think I will call week five to a close. We're at just about 90 minutes, 91 minutes for this lecture. So I've given back 15 or 20 minutes that I overran last week, and I'll try to do that again next week. So let's call week five to a close, a little bit on correlations in part B and spurious and Simpsons. If you haven't seen those before, it's useful if you have. It's just a quick overview. Thank you very much.